Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is your official Leguizamarama spoiler warning. If you haven't seen The Survivor from 2021, we will be spoiling it in the second half of the podcast. So you can listen to the first half, but when we start talking about the film, we will be spoiling it. Otherwise, please enjoy this episode of Leguizamarama.
Peace. I hate the word.
Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, a podcast where each week me and my mate chat about John Leguizamo, why we like him. We talk about all his movies. We've done heaps now. We're on 148 eps or some shit like that. That's insane. We've got a Leguizarias coming up soon. Every 50 eps. That's enough of that.
And didn't we give it a different name each time?
No, you wanted Leguemmies. The Leguemmies, and we're not going with that. My name is Mish Witchrup. You might know me from not calling it the Leguemmies, but I'm open to calling it the Leguizovskas.
Are you?
No. The Leguizarias is too good. And I'm joined, as always, by my mate,
Zachary Ruane, who you might know as really being in the corner for the Legogies.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And the gold Legogi goes to
Mission Zach.
John Leguizamo.
Yeah, maybe John would get it. This week we're joined by a friend.
A friend and a guest.
A guest. We love him. I'm so glad that this is the film that we chose to bring this guest on for. Keeping it light, keeping it simple, you know? Yeah. It's not always Puss in Boots in this family. Oh my God, they're a podcaster, they're a comedian, they're incredible. And in all seriousness, if you ask any comedian in Australia who their favourite comedian is, like 90% of the time they say our guest. This is fact. We're joined by Jordan Barr.
That's the nicest thing I've ever heard. I didn't know anybody listened.
No, it's true.
I thought they all went on their phones.
No.
Like me.
In all of the not Vox Pop, you know those like chat to camera things that Comedy Festival brings out each year? They always ask, like, who should we keep an eye out for? And fucking everyone says Jordan Barr.
Jordan Barr, she's hot, hot, hot.
Yeah, you're hot.
Get
property
in while
right
the,
now.
Get in while the ticks are cheap.
And yeah, and boy, are they. You might even get them for free.
Be the one that, you get to say you saw Jordan Barr when Jordan Barr was charging less for tickets.
No, but it's so true. Like, if you don't believe me, ask Cal Wilson. Cal Wilson said Jordan Barr. They all love Jordan Barr. Hey, Jordan, thanks for joining us.
There's a lot of buzz about Jordan Barr.
I love that. I love never reading my potential, or meeting it. I can barely read as is.
But you, like, instantly get 10% if Jordan uses the buzz about Barr as her next comedy festival.
There's a lot of buzz about Barr. You can quote me on that.
That
has now been published. And you can say there's a lot of buzz about Barr. Zachary Ruane, open bracket, Auntie Donna, close bracket.
Do you find beautiful. It sits on the lips.
Do you find it difficult to name comedy festival shows?
Yes. My first two, I was like, I'm just going to name all of my comedy festival shows after Cranberry songs. So the first one was Zombie and then Dreams. And then I was like, I do need to sell tickets. And so I thought I'd go for more of a target
market. Ode to my family.
Yeah. I'll wait till a family member dies. Then I'll do my ode to my family one. Something devastating, but ultimately heartwarming at the end, I'm sure. I don't know. I find it tricky because also, like, sometimes you lock yourself into a theme and then you're like, I don't know anything.
You got to keep it a little vague.
Yes.
You got to keep it a little bit vague.
Well, often they ask for the title before I've written the show, before I've done anything. So I can't ever make the title about the show.
Yeah.
I'm shocking at naming shows. I've done, okay, in fairness, I've named one, but like, because the first,
Okay.
Well, no, the
you
first
must be real bad.
To be fair,
I'm bad. Yeah. I am bad. The first,
why are you bad at it? What do you mean?
I just go into mad panic. The first
that
show
doesn't mean you're bad at it. That means you've got anxieties around it. And the way to get through that is to say, "Hey, you're not that bad at it."
Mm, thank you.
Well, actually, let's hear the name.
No, so my first ever comedy festival show was called Soy Fat White, which is an excellent
title. That's funny.
It's funny.
That's funny
shit. It says a little bit about me. It's delicious. It's tasty, right?
Yeah.
That was not, I did not name that show. That was not the original title of the show. The original title of the show was The Manager. And I told my friend Michelle Brazy, a friend of the pod, Comedy Darling, and she took me my hands and went, no. Like she just went, no, honey, no, that's not the title of your show. And I was like, oh, but that's kind of what I think it's going to be about. Is this? And she's just like, no, it's a that's an awful title.
That sounds like a BBC like crime drama that comes out. I think I'm pretty sure there was one with Elizabeth Debicki in it. If Elizabeth Debicki's in it, it's not a comedy.
Yeah, no, not
you
at
can't
all.
Be doing that.
And so she named it. She just went, oh, just name it Soy Fat White. And I was like, okay. And then it went off. And then my second show was called Butterfingers, which I named.
That's a good name.
It's fine.
No, that's a good name.
Thank you. But it had nothing to do with my show.
That doesn't matter.
I don't think that matters. Have you ever seen, and I think he's so funny, Brett Blake's posters and all names? It's always like Turbo Bogan or something like that. Yeah. You just want to get something that's going to titillate the people you want in. I called mine Saturn Return because I wanted astrology. I just didn't want, bless them, and I wish I was the comedian for them, but I'm not. I just didn't want a crowd of six-year-old men, which happened to me a couple times, and I could not tell you why.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I was the comedian for you.
Yeah, I got that in Sydney. I had a show that I did at Sydney Comedy Festival. It was my first ever Sydney Comedy Festival this year, and I did one show where about 50% of the audience were like 50-year-old couples that came to my show because they got there early and were waiting to go to the 7:30, 8 o'clock show. And they just did not like me.
It's so hard because you want to do it for them.
You
want to be the comedian for them, but you just can't because they don't think it's funny to say you're going to kill yourself.
Yeah, I made a Bob Brown joke and they loved that.
Great.
And then I made a pegging joke and they were like, oh, absolutely not. Like, you know what I mean?
And the thing you realize pretty soon is it's like the show is what the show is. And if I too much for this audience, then the people that will like it won't like it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So then you're just like caught in this crazy world. I remember the first ever Edinburgh we did. I was out flyering and I met this guy. I think I've told this story on the podcast before. And I kept being like, halfway through, I realized that I was doing too good of a job of flyering. And I realized that he would hate the show. It was this man, he was clearly like wealthy, educated. He was there with his wife and children. And I talked about the fact that it was sketch. And then he said that he did Footlights when he was at Cambridge.
Oh.
He was like, well, you know, when I was at Cambridge, I did Footlights. And then we had this like big conversation, this great conversation about, because I'm a big fan of like a lot of comedians that have come out of that. So we were talking about Fry and Laurie and we were talking about like lots and lots of comedians.
The list is endless.
No,
big fan.
I just, you
Emma
know
Thompson,
what,
she was.
Emma Thompson was in their era and then I'm having this crazy mental blank. Mitchell and Webb were Cambridge.
Oh, get out.
Mr. Bean.
Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson.
All the British comedians with posh accents.
All the British comedians with posh accents. And then all the ones without posh accents were like underground 80s cool. Yeah. So French and Saunders weren't. They were like middle class. But then they kind of sound a bit posh because they could do posh. But anyway, so and he was just like, oh, yes, I love sketch. And I was really connecting with him. And then I realized like about halfway through this conversation, I was like, oh, no, he's going to come to the show. And then I was like, I can't tell him don't come because that's insulting. And it was just this awful, awful interaction where the rest of the conversation, I was like, oh, no, he's going to come. But I don't want him to come. But I'm flyering him.
Did
so
he
I'm
come?
Like selling. And then he came. And I'd never seen someone just not even disappointed, just like, well, this is not for me. Just an hour of that and he was sitting in the front row.
Wanted you to know you got him too. Like, here I am supporting my peers.
He was so excited. He was excited for like fucking Cambridge Footlight sketch. And then we were just like, rah, fucking fuck, rah, rah.
Somebody came out dressed as a ball sack.
Pretty much.
And sang a duet.
Yeah, pretty much. It was awful. It was truly awful.
That's so funny.
But that's the way you got, because then also you're just like, well, I sold that fucking ticket.
Yeah, well, that's $15 in my pocket, cunt.
I think I pitched a show that I was like, this is going to be about climate change. I don't know why. And I was like, I'll make it funny. It's not. And then I just, the whole show was about Sister Wives. Like, I just kept coming back to the show Sister Wives, and I was like, God, I wonder how many people thought they were coming to see a little smarty, smart, intelligent comedian be like, and, you know, the real thing is that polar bears are dying, blah, blah, blah. But instead I was like, have you seen this show?
That's good. Great. No, what funny stuff can you say about, like, the end of the world? So Sister Wives is so much more interesting.
Oh, my God, it's better.
Do you TikTok?
Yeah.
Do you TikTok?
Do you TikTok?
I'm one with the kids.
We do a secret little handshake. I got onto Sister Wives TikTok.
Yeah.
Or I should say Polly TikTok, which is great.
Because
there's so many different corners of Polly TikTok.
Yeah.
And Sister Wives TikTok is phenomenal because it's like little 1 minute documentaries where they just are like normalizing their lives as best they can in 1 minute through a lot of edits, like day in our life stuff. It's just great. I love TikTok.
I do you know what I just got? I just got an app that I learned about from another podcast, from a clip from another podcast that stops you from opening TikTok too quickly.
So how does it stop you?
It's called One Sec, and you open it and it makes you wait for 7 seconds before the app opens. And that because I love TikTok so much, I was like, I need to stop.
That's what I need, because I saw a TikTok about how bad TikTok was, and they were like, if you and I did it today, and it fucking worked. I open up my app. The woman, she was a doctor, controversial, and she said that if you don't look at your phone, like if you open your phone first thing in the morning, you train your brain to need it, like. All day. And so if you just like don't do something else and then pick up your phone, whereas I like rely on it to wake up in the morning. I'm like, I simply cannot hydrate my eyes without the
I need
blinding
that,
light.
That delicious blinding light. Yeah.
And how, like at the end of each week when you get that, this is how long you spent on your phone message. I'm always, like I've never revealed because it's deeply depressing.
Well, this.
But also.
It can't keep going up.
There is nothing in me, like this, like don't go on your phone in the morning. It's like. There's nothing happening in my life that I feel is stunted because I'm using my phone in the morning currently.
But that's what you think.
But your brain is rotting.
Well, what else am I
going
to do? Look out the window.
Get up. Go see the world.
Shake hands with a neighbour. Ask them how they're doing.
My neighbour hates me.
Like, read a newspaper. Change the world. Go, hey, wait a second, that's not on. Fix climate change.
Fix climate change, Mish. Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah, you know, we're all here fixing climate. No, I always, maybe once every few months, I try to do it every few months. It happens more once every 6 months. I do, and you would know this because you have to get in contact with me sometimes, I do like a no phone periods of time. So like maybe a week ago I turn off my phone for 2 or 3 days and it is fucked up. It's fucked up. The first day, it's like everyone that says, oh, I don't really need my phone is like a heroin addict that doesn't know they're addicted yet because they haven't tried to stop.
Yeah.
You turn off your phone and you put – no, because I say that too.
Yeah.
I put it away and literally I'm just like
– yeah,
like, fucking get me some fucking little videos.
Yes.
I need my little videos.
I just need – what am I going to do while I shit?
I just need my little videos. Fuck, fuck.
But if we didn't,
you got psycho.
But if we didn't have TikTok,
how
would we know that Jonah Hill is a bit of a fucking idiot?
And I did need to know that.
And
there
I did
something
need to know that.
Was satisfied knowing that.
I'll talk about it.
When he did that therapist doco, I was like, alarm bells.
Oh,
alarm bells.
I reckon as when he got the tattoo that said body love on his shoulder blade, I was like, ooh, I reckon.
Something's
he
up.
He doth protest a bit too much, methinks.
And he wasn't at Beanie's wedding.
Yeah, he wasn't at Beanie's wedding.
Oh, wasn't he?
No. Well, I mean, somebody on TikTok said that he wasn't.
Do you know what I think when I heard that, I was just like, didn't have the room in my heart. I don't have the room in my heart for this information. Yeah. I'm like, I'm sorry for all the people hurt, but I don't know this man.
No, yes.
But now I know this about him.
Yes, I know. Yes. That's exactly. I got, when I say I became addicted to it, I mean, it was, it's not, I didn't mean to. It was just like information that was being thrown at me that I was being forced to consume because of the amount of TikTok I watch.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it consumed, honestly, about 48 hours of my life was just this like, that's so deeply private. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, God, how embarrassing. And that is such deeply, like for anyone who has no idea what we're talking about, Jonah Hill's ex released a bunch of messages on her Instagram that he had sent her, private messages that he had sent her during their relationship, with a list of things he called his boundaries, which were essentially rules to, that he wanted her to follow about how she dressed and who she hung out
some
with.
Some great Twitters about it as well. I mean, in the dying days of Twitter, some great tweets.
Oh yeah.
Very funny, very clever.
Reminds us why we're all here.
Quick shout out to Hot Department, who did one of the funniest
videos.
Yes! Oh, really? Oh, did they do a video? Yeah, I'll watch it after.
Oh, my God, it's great. So funny.
Joel Kim Booster did a great tweet as well, where he said, like a great gay weekend, and it was just the list taken out of
yes.
It's amazing. Every single, like,
I love it. Yeah. So I read it as like my summer bucket list.
I just
read, my summer bucket list. It's so good,
so funny. I just read, I was just like, oh, this is so deeply embarrassing for this guy that I don't know.
Well, yeah, but it's also like, isn't it so funny that when like guys do these like bad behavior, it's also so like. Like so embarrassing the way that they express themselves, like the whole Jonah Hill thing. Like, I don't agree with him, but I also find the way that he communicated so cringe and awkward. Yeah. And then like the same with that guy from Rick and Morty, like his messages that he was sending, so bad, but also like, bro, it's so bad. That's so embarrassing.
It's just embarrassing. It's just like that is really embarrassing.
The Rick and Morty one is such a good point. Yeah. Did you say that? Because it was just like, okay. These messages that you're sending are like in so clearly in the realm of you shouldn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. But did you have to like do it so ooh woo?
Like, I imagine him in like a top hat. Like, he felt like
a little monocle or something. Yes. It was very m'lady.
Absolutely.
M'lady's really
good. It was so weird. Like, guy who smokes weed once talking about weed at a party. Yeah. Like, I just couldn't.
It was very much like he read a book about what you, like, how to pick up girls.
Yes, yes.
And was just like, oh, and just followed the guidelines without any, like, life experience.
It's so
whatever.
Wild.
It was just, like, just embarrassing. The Jonah Hill one, though, that was just, like, literally, like, that is just very embarrassing for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't have anything to say about it except it was just
so
fucking
revealing.
Full on. Yeah, I would say so.
I kept getting into little fights with people online. Well, I wasn't. They were just, I posted a video about it. It was nothing, but people got really angry and started fighting underneath. But it was like kind of incredible because they would be like, what if your partner posted a bikini photo? And I'd be like, thrilled. Cannot relate. Could you imagine?
Oh, my God.
Like, imagine being mad about a bikini photo, you psycho.
But also I'm fairly certain, met her through Instagram.
He slid into her DMs because of one of her bikini photos.
Isn't that the most outrageous thing you've ever heard? That's like me.
I mean, we've talked about another more outrageous thing in the same context.
Yeah, okay,
the cartoon guy was the more cartoon outrageous.
Guy was, pretty bad.
It's all like, it's all bad. No, of course. The cartoon guy was hitting on
some pretty bad.
Okay, swings around about to get it. But like,
no, it was very, look, absolutely. The sliding into the, my point is like, I don't know this man.
Oh, no.
And then, and it's like the people that were defending him, it's like, you don't know this man.
You don't know
this man. No one knows this man.
Yeah. Oh, my God, it's parade here. We can't, nobody knows this man.
I had my first ever online fight the other day. I posted about it on my stories.
What did
on
you fight
threads.
About?
It wasn't a fight, but it was just a guy.
By the way, can I just very, very quickly say, kudos to you and your commitment to threads.
Well, I went hard. Because it was the thread rush of 23.
I was on holiday, a mini holiday granted, but I was on holiday and Zach messaged me Get on Threads right now, immediately.
Sometimes I like to just be off my phone for a day.
So,
well, no, because I knew I was going off my phone that weekend.
So you had to thread
and
up.
I was like, I got a fucking thread. I've got 3 days. And, like, I was going offline on Saturday and I'd planned it and Threads went live on Thursday. I was like, I have, like, 38 hours to do as much fucking threading as possible.
And you got like, and he was like, download immediate. So I did. And I was like, okay, done. He's like, great.
Please don't give it. I'm trying to give this vibe of being chill, not like this, like social media, like, nah. I'm giving you advice as a friend, and now you're like letting everyone know that I'm
sweating.
Not chill. I was like, Mish, you gotta,
you must get thread immediately. But you're so into thread. And I respect it, I suppose, because like, you gotta get in early if you want them thread dollars.
Yeah, it does feel like you've invested in Microsoft early on. Yeah. You're like, guys, get an Xbox.
Get into the Xbox. Threads, it's going to happen. When you get older, you learn that you've missed it. Like, I missed the boat with Facebook and I missed the boat with Instagram. Mm. So, like, now I'm just like, fucking get on it with any new social media app. But I'm not that full on. Like, I'm not a Mastodon or Blue Lude.
You were being a helpful friend and colleague, and I appreciate it.
I did a thread where I said people that don't like Star Trek probably don't know how hot Spock is now, because the new Spock is really hot. Right?
Are you a Star Trek fan?
No, but I'll watch it now. So Spock is hot.
Spock is very hot, and then a lot of like hardcore Star Trek fans were like, Spock was always hot, but I'm like, not like this.
No, I've seen pictures like of this. Spock.
Well, apparently it was always hot. I'll show you the new Spock.
I'm looking up hot Spock.
I didn't know there could be several Spocks.
I have a picture because I sent it to someone else because it started a conversation.
Does he get new skin or is Spock
this is the
like
new
a
Spock.
Guy?
It's a new actor.
Okay,
playing.
He's got Spock.
Ripped.
Yeah, he's like he's Gregory Peck's grandson.
Get out.
And it's like Gregory Peck, the Gregory Peck line, I presume then just married European models for the next 50 years.
Fitting. So it's just so hot.
It's just like Peck.
I'm going to show you both some fan art.
Oh, my God. What are they called when this points down to the penis?
That's Zachary Quinto Spock.
Oh, okay.
Who is also very hot. Mm. But the new Spock is very, very hot. Anyway, my point is... My point is, I just did this funny little thread where I was like, people that don't like Star Trek probably don't know how hot Spock is now. That's not true. Even if you think Spock is hot, you might not like the storytelling devices.
Yeah.
I get it. I don't think whether you like an hour of people like talking about stuff.
No. Mm. Zach, you said something on the internet though, and that sums up your entire belief system.
Well, what I've now learned is that it doesn't actually matter what you say. Because the comment I got in response was like, we're expecting, all right, what's he going to say about Spock? What's he going to, this guy said, woke Trek. They can't go a single episode without some woke bullshit virtue signal these days.
What?
That was his response to.
Hot Spock.
Spock's hot now.
Woke Trek.
And then it's just like, and
that's good.
It doesn't really work. Star and woke or not.
I've got to say, good comedy festival show title.
Woke Trek. You as hot Spock.
Shotgun.
That's the most tuxedo cat.
Yeah.
But woke Trek, but which is so funny because it's like, what? I won't go into it, but like I posted a picture of this because it went on, the conversation went on, and every Star Trek fan I know that messaged me and was just like, Star Trek has always been woke. Like, it's the most woke series. Yeah. It's like this aspiration. It did diversity before diversity was a thing. It might not have done it as well as it's done now, but it did diversity. Like, they wanted it to show brought together world. It was always about making the best choice in difficult circumstances. It is and always has been the most woke show in the world. It's like, what show did you think you were watching? Like,
it's also set in space, bro. It's fine, man. If you're worried about it affecting you, it probably won't.
And they've literally made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. You just don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
You can go and watch any of the hundreds of other shows. Anyway.
Is this person follow you.
No, just because of Threads, the algorithm was just putting you in front of anyone. And that was, it was the gold rush, but also, you know, you were getting put in front of anyone. So anyway, I wanted to have this big conversation with him about, but I like held in and I just responded with, Spock is hot now.
Okay.
And then he said, yeah, so what? For every 10 seconds of hot Spock, I have to sit through 10 minutes of social justice warrior diatribe. Which, again, that's like, it's literally been people talking about
Thread sounds awful.
And then I said, I'm so sorry. I think you misunderstand the point I was making. The actor who plays Spock now is hot. And they've made ears that work good with his face.
Finally.
And then this, I didn't share this. He said, no, I do get it. You're mid.
You're mid?
Oh,
no!
You're mid.
And then I said, but Spock is hot now. And then someone else came in and defended me. And you don't have to do this. If anyone's ever fighting with me, like clearly I've got a thing going on. So if you're listening, you don't have to defend me on Threads.
This but is so good,
someone did come
Zach.
In and defend me. And they said, your entire profile is a disaster, which admittedly it was.
Yeah.
I'd been on the... But I was like, I could go in for his profile. I could go in for like the fact that Star Trek has always been woke. But I was like, isn't it funnier to just stay on the hot Spock is hot now?
Because that was the whole point the whole time.
I never said anything about
woke
Trek.
You never said anything else.
I was just like, cool, man. Great opinion, bro.
But you must agree, Spock is hot.
Spock's gotten hot, though.
Spock's gotten hot. But you can't say Spock is hot because then he's gay.
Then he said, oh, no. So someone said, your entire profile is a disaster. He said, oh, no, my throwaway anonymous profile on Threads that I've had for 5 days is a disaster. Help. I've been emotionally wounded. Cry face. And then I said, I nearly didn't respond because I didn't want to encourage the other person.
I'm so glad you did. I'm enjoying this so much. I've never loved you more.
I said, I'm sorry that you're feeling emotionally wounded. If it makes you feel better, Spock is hot now.
Did he write back?
And then I think Instagram deleted his account.
No.
Because he was being much nastier than he was to me to other people. He was
and
being a nasty
Threads
part.
Is like all about being, Big Boy Zuck was like, you have to be kind.
Yeah. Can't say cunt.
You can't say cunt on Threads.
No. Whenever I go to write cunt, or most of the time I go to write cunt, it does a little message saying, hey, you sure you want to say that?
Can you say fuck?
Yeah, because cunt is a mean word in other countries. But I actually think, I'm not going to, there's other countries where this has been much worse for them, but Facebook has a bit of an issue of like moderators not speaking the local language.
Yeah.
I'm not comparing me saying cunt to other situations.
No.
I'm not saying that, but I do think they should have a few Australians in the moderator
Absolutely.
Team. But like cunt's not that bad of a word. If it's an Australian account.
Is it
account,
just cunt you can't say? Can you say pussy?
No, it's the issue is because in America, if you say cunt, it's like a it's
you
a
can
mean.
Feel the air get sucked out of the room. You say cunt in America,
it's like a bad word. It's a sexist word in America. Whereas here,
but we have American listeners and they don't pull us up on it
because they know that we're not. Well, maybe they don't like. Maybe we've just got a bunch of sexists. Yeah, fucking say it.
Because
cunt.
They know that this isn't woke Lazama.
If you are, and if you're.
This is edgy and hard.
No, they know they understand the context. I think younger Americans understand that it's not.
Yeah.
In Scotland and Australia in particular, it's not as bad of a word.
Woke Guzama would definitely be a very good Patreon. Just you and me doing hot takes.
Hot takes. Woke Guzama.
Oh, I love it.
But like it's all a lot of like, can
just
I?
Just a lot of danger around the point. Just apologizing.
I don't know if
great film for us to work lasagna. I can work lasagna.
Work lasagna.
It's just vegan.
It's layers of blame and shame.
Oh, it's so funny.
I love that. I get my Instagram stories deleted all the time because I forget that you can't threaten to kill someone. And like, obviously I'm doing it out of like fun. I'm like, you should, especially during comedy festival, but like, I'll be like, see this show or I'll kill you. Mm. And it gets deleted. Because they see that as a threat. And I'm like, context. I can't kill 99% of Melbourne for not seeing a show at the Butterfly Club.
I had a thing I was in on TikTok. It was just a sketch that I did that I was in about what, bucks parties and that they're a bit lame.
Yeah, cool.
And that was the joke, is that men go to these bucks parties and they pretend to be tough, but they're usually just like doing activities, right? It's not the best sketch in the world. It was just a sketch.
It's a very funny sketch.
And the comment underneath it, there was a comment on it that said something like, you know, like, oh, yeah, men are inferior. Way to go, ABC.
Oh, my God.
And I screenshotted it and shared it. And I was just like, I just thought it was a bit funny that about bucks parties, but whatever, man. And then Instagram pulled it down because of what he was saying was inflammatory. Like, because, like,
yeah,
it was like, there are layers. Are you serious?
That's so interesting. I only ever had one thing taken off my Instagram.
Yeah.
And it was a story. And it was me in a sports bra.
Oh, and my all the, God.
And it was during COVID, which is over now. But it was during, finished, done. Woo, we did it.
It's over.
2020. And I posted a photo of myself. It wasn't even like sexy. I mean, it was sexy because it was me in a sports bra. But it wasn't me trying to be like full, like, get your dick out or something like that. It was like.
And that's you know sexy.
What, you yeah, know
that,
what that, sexy. You know what a TV show.
Come on. Actually, Instagram's fine with that because they're like, this is not.
But under, and I wrote something along the lines of something cute. I don't know. It was adorable. And it got deleted because it was lewd images. And I was just like,
fuck off.
Oh, and I was, if I'd had the energy, but I was depressed because it was 2020 and we're all in lockdown. If I'd had the energy, I probably would have launched some sort of like tirade about how ridiculous that is because people post pictures in their bikinis all the time.
Literally.
But Mish in a fucking sports bra in a bedroom.
It is like, it's also like so interesting now because I'm seeing a lot of my friends who've had top surgery post topless photos and I'm like, it's the same nipples.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if anybody else does that, it's just crazy because it, and they acknowledge in it, they're like, this won't get taken down now because it's like a different, like, it's,
I wonder
it's
if I post.
An issue with the memory glands.
Yeah. I would
they
be
know,
so,
they know.
The thing is, I no would milk. Be so curious
no
to see.
Milk. Those no nipples milk. Can't make milk.
Because I don't want to eat them. I'm dairy intolerant. Does our milk have dairy in it?
Sorry?
Does our milk?
Is it dairy?
Sorry, I had to point it's got lactose. Point at my tits while I said that.
Well, is our milk?
Is it dairy?
It's got lactose in it.
What is dairy? Like, what is dairy?
Yeah.
Is
the
question. Wow. Is it dairy?
Oh, my God.
Dairy?
Is breast milk dairy? Yes.
Well, is goat milk dairy?
No,
yeah.
Dairy, wouldn't
is dairy
it be...
just is dairy just the milk of a cow?
No, dairy
or is it the
is
milk
like
of a mammal?
Any milk.
No, because goat's milk is dairy.
Like, what about snake milk?
That's
that would be dairy. I think it's milk that comes from an animal, and we're an animal, so it would be dairy.
You know
however,
what?
If someone gave me a glass of their breast milk, as a vegan, I could drink it because it's consensually given to me.
Okay, what if and a cow came up to
you? You don't know me and my cow.
And that's on woke lasagna.
Get your dick out, suck on my udder.
All right, we really should talk about.
We didn't talk about John Leguizamo.
No, we're going to do that after we do
we'll
the
do the ad and then can we just talk about John Leguizamo before the blurb?
Yeah.
Let's do the ad.
So when we're going to go to the ad and when we come back, we're going to hear Jordan Barr's hot take on John Leguizamo.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Leguizamo.
Hi, welcome back to the ad you may or may not have heard.
It's didn't tough get one
out
last
there.
We didn't
it's
get one
tough
last
out
week.
There for advertisers right now. It's a bad, you know, it all trickles down.
I was listening to it just to review through like very, very quick on like times two speed, making sure that everything for the pod last week was good after I'd posted it. And we didn't get an ad and it does sound really awkward. It's like, okay, so here's the ad. If we got one, welcome back. Very awkward.
If we ever do
you
a Patreon,
yeah.
That's a great point to plug the Patreon.
Yes, yes.
So if we have a Patreon now,
yeah.
If you didn't hear an ad, get on it. We don't have a Patreon as of recording
no,
this.
No, absolutely
but
not.
Maybe in 6 months' time.
So a little bit of a backstory here. Oh. I've wanted to get Jordan on the pod for a while anyway because I'm a fan.
Yeah, and I've been saying no. That's not true.
Zach's got beef with you, Jordan.
Yeah, 1997, you remember?
Yeah, I recall.
We're slowly going through all of our mates in comedy and you were carbon. I was very excited. However, Jordan and I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago. A little quick plug for Sam Peterson's Confessions of the Idiots.
Right? I've heard of it.
And we were just doing our the chat at the start where he's like, so what do you guys do? You do the podcast, blah, blah. And I said, I do Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, which is about John Leguizamo. And to my right where Jordan was sitting, Jordan just says, oh, I love him.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, excuse me. And I genuinely massive fan of his work. And then started listing off movies he's done. We have a legitimate fan in the room.
Wow. Yeah.
I feel like, is this freaky? Like, I feel like everyone should be fans of John Leguizamo.
You would be surprised how many people, one of the reasons why we started doing it was because John Leguizamo is the person everyone's like, who's that? And then you show them a photo and they go, oh, he's X from X.
Most people, I don't even bother trying to explain or list the films. I'm like, if as soon as I show you a photo, you'll have a film that you'll go.
100%.
Yeah. Oh, Tibble.
Yeah. Oh. Yes.
And you've joined a very small crew of people who have done this podcast that were legitimate big fans, probably to the same level of fandom that Zach and I were before we started the podcast.
Jude Pearl, Alexi Toliopoulos,
Alice Tovey.
Everything he does is good.
Oh, it's great.
And even if the project itself is bad, his integrity remains. And you just know.
How did we talk about other shit for a half hour? What the fuck was this? We are the worst podcasters in the world.
No, we have to talk about Jonah Hill first and then we talk about John. I just think that and it also is very apparent to me that he's a nice guy to work with because he works with the same people again.
He does.
And he also just seems like a good energy and he's never he knows his place in a scene too because he'll either be the lead and he'll be crushing it or he'll sit comfortably as a side character and just contributes to the, doesn't scene steal.
No.
And if he does, it's just because you're like, oh my God, John Leguizamo's in this every time. And I think I said this to you, I don't know if it was on the pod or not, but I was like, I remember being now this, we are talking about an actor because I knew him as Tibble, obviously. And then I'm a bit of an IMDb freak. I always have the trivia up while I'm watching the movie and I look up all the actors and have a bit of a stalk and stuff like that. But I remember finding out that he was, I would have been in at school and I found out that he also voiced Sid in Ice Age. And that was a real come to Jesus moment. I was like, what?
Yeah.
We didn't know that when we committed to this podcast.
That's insane to me. Yeah. That's about you guys.
Yeah, don't rewatch Ice Age.
There's 20 of them.
I think they're bringing out another. They got that little squirrel that they just keep wheeling out.
Little fucking squirrel.
I can't wait.
That squirrel went to space in the last one.
He still just can't get his nut.
He just can't get his nut.
He wanted that nut so bad, he went into outer space. He made the whole solar system.
I don't think you understand, Jordan. In Ice Age, this squirrel cunt made Saturn. He literally created Saturn.
Ice Age has lost the fucking plot by 5. I'll tell you how I know that. I've had to watch them all because of a stupid fucking
decision.
And Sid's
still there? What is the lifespan of my life?
Not only is Sid still there, but every single character that they've picked up over the last 5 movies is still fucking in it. Following about 25 different fucking mammals at this point.
It's legit. I think we've finished. I think we've finished with the films, but it was legit a Robert Altman film by the end. There was 20 fucking kooky little animals.
Yeah.
All with a little story.
Doesn't Sid have a family too that just keeps showing up?
Yeah. Everyone's got a family. It's like Magnolia. Everyone's got their own little stories.
And so in choosing this film.
It's like Magnolia.
It is. It's just well, I wonder what's happening with the little rats that we met in Ice Age 3. Well, they're still in the journey.
So funny. Romano's brother is the mammoth, right?
No, Ray Romano is the
brother. Ray Romano is the mammoth. Oh, okay.
Leary is the saber-toothed tiger. And
Dennis Leary, that's right!
And his girlfriend is Jennifer Lopez.
They don't even cast with any. Dennis Leary and Jennifer Lopez. Yeah. Jennifer Lopez from The Cell. What's she doing?
I got really confused until today when I was on TikTok, unfortunately.
That's fine.
But I, because you know how Who's the guy from Seinfeld who comes through the door? Kramer. Mm. You know how Kramer did it, had a comedy set, and then he went AWOL and said the N-word about 46 times and nobody's seen him since. I, for the longest time, thought that the person who did that was the guy who played Ray Romano's brother in Everybody Loves Raymond. And I saw a trailer and the wrong kooky tall guy.
Oh my God, that could, you could have really.
Well,
like,
no, in fairness, there were quite a few tall, kooky.
Yeah.
Like fun brother characters.
Absolutely.
Around that era.
Gangly guys.
So it makes sense. It makes sense. Now, my thinking in choosing the survivor.
Are we talking about the film now?
Let's jump to it.
Yeah, yeah.
My thinking in choosing the survivor for you was actually something I thought out. Now, I hadn't seen this film, but I was like, let's watch one that you haven't seen.
Uh-huh.
That none of us have seen. I knew that you hadn't seen it. And I was like, oh, it's a new movie. What are the chances of Jordan having seen The Survivor? And I looked like at the I didn't even watch the trailer for this. I just read the blurb. I'm like, okay, this sounds interesting. We got a movie buff on our hands. Let's chuck him The Survivor. I don't think I thought fully because I should leave the super depressing ones for you and me, I feel.
Yeah.
Instead of bringing guests in, making them watch a movie over 2 hours long about
we're having to navigate complex topics.
Yeah, well, let me do the blurb.
Before we talk about the blurb, I think this is worth a trigger warning.
Oh, yeah.
Around, there's, I would say Holocaust, anything around the Holocaust, anything around those sort of concepts. I don't think we're going to go, you know, I don't think we're equipped to go that deep, but just a heads up, we by virtue of what this film's about, we'll be covering some of those topics. Yeah. So.
I was curious.
I'm very honest.
As it began, I was like, how do they approach, like, have you done When They See Us yet?
No.
Okay. No. I reckon.
So and no. We kind of have a list of movies that where we go, like When They See Us is one of my favorite shows.
It's incredible,
I stopped watching it. So I was watching When They, this is cute. I was watching When They See Us when Zach and I came up with the idea for this podcast.
Right.
So I stopped watching it.
Right.
So I've only watched 2 episodes of it, but fuck, it was so good.
But it is one of those things where it's, I mean, we've not really talked that openly about it, but it's on the list of like, how are we going to talk about this? Just because, you know, it's an incredible piece of filmmaking, but there's nothing I'm going to add. Me making a piece of content about it, is good because I think people should watch it. Same with this show. We'll talk about that.
Mm.
You know, it's good to talk about films like this because then people watch it.
Yeah.
Mm. But what am I going
to
add?
Yeah.
I'm not smart enough. It adds to the never-ending mosaic of John Leguizamo's work because you got When They See Us, which is one of the heaviest, saddest shows I've ever watched.
Beautiful. But like, what am I going to say? Like, maybe our episode about that is just like, go watch it.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about it. Yeah. Just go watch it.
I do have, and maybe this is not appropriate, but I do have a slightly funny story about when I was watching When They See Us because I was watching it with my brother when I was still living at home. And actually, I've just moved back home. I don't know why I said that. Like, that's a past self that I've grown out of. Anyway, I was watching it with my brother and my mum came in. And you know that bad lawyer that's played by Felicity Huffman?
Yeah.
The real bad lady. She was at the end defending herself for her bad deeds, terrible person. And my mum walked in and was like, God, it was hard for women back then. God, they really had to fight for their place and they didn't do things that they would necessarily be proud of, but they were just trying to keep up with the men. And I was like, Mum, no.
No.
I was like,
Mum,
I'm like,
4 hours of context that you
I'm
need.
I'm telling you, woman's not a feminist. It's not.
You got it wrong, Mum.
She's wearing shoulder pads, but it's for the devil.
I really appreciate the sentiment, but wrong. Say to
Mum, this was directed by a woman.
Yeah.
It's okay. This is not the one. This is not the one to back.
I don't think you want to die on this hill.
All right. The Survivor is a biographical drama based on the life of Harry Haft, a Jewish man from Poland who survived Auschwitz concentration camp by taking part in boxing matches with other inmates where they fought to the death as a form of entertainment for the soldiers. It mostly follows his life post-war as he builds a boxing career and searches for his long-lost wife, all whilst being plagued by his traumatic memories. It's hard to make jokes in this blurb or keep it light considering how fucking depressing this film was, but I will say that Danny DeVito pops up sporadically throughout the film and he's fucking iconic. John Leguizamo plays Pepe. Haft's boxing coach, a man whose hunger to win, is almost as strong as his little but fierce moustache.
I'll say I was when we started watching this film, I was like, oh, no, we shouldn't have gotten a guest on. I'm sorry that we're making you talk about such heavy things.
Oh, it's fine.
Oh, great.
I'm into it. quite macabre. Although I'm not into the themes of the film. No. Sorry, I should
But you're happy to go there.
I'm happy to talk about it.
I was watching it and I thought it was a really powerful film. I'm so glad I got to watch it. There are times doing this podcast where I'm so happy that we're doing it because I get to watch something I never would have watched. This is a HBO film.
Yep. Is it really?
Yeah. But with great filmmakers, like the director did Good Morning Vietnam. And
true.
So it's a really great director, but it wasn't given a cinematic release. And I just think that this is not a film I would have watched, and I think it's not a film that would have appealed to me based on the blurb or the images. I would have thought, there are other films that tell this story better, I would have thought.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a film that has a lot of, like, iconography and a lot of images and a lot of things that we've seen in other films, you know, like Schindler's List, but even, boxing movies. There's a lot of boxing movies out there. But the way it puts it all together, I just thought there was a really unique perspective, and it was a really thought it was really beautiful. I thought it was really beautifully written.
Yeah.
There were some really fantastic scenes, and it's not often, I think maybe because it was TV, there were just scenes that almost felt like theatre, just people talking about ideas, which is very rare. And I thought there was a frankness to it. I was trying to place what makes this different to, say, a Meadowland, which I couldn't really get behind. We watched a very depressing indie film a few weeks back, and I think sometimes I like contrast, and this director understands that. Good Morning Vietnam is a devastating film that's funny for most of it, and then it kind of hits you. And this film is heavy from the start, but I think what it has that I really thought was very powerful was a frankness. People just talk about things. There's not like a tiptoeing around it. There's not like a building up to it. It's just like, these are the themes we're talking about. And the way it's sort of addressed so sort of forwardly, I thought was really powerful, and I think it's a film that's very much worth seeing. I would really recommend it to
that's
people.
That's very interesting. I think that you've said that right. I think that's exactly what was really, really that made this film unique from other war films, I suppose, was the frankness.
Yeah, and the exploration of themes of by it being set now, although I've heard that I read a review of it and there's apparently a Sidney Lumet film with a very similar structure where it's a guy living in Harlem in the 60s it's flashbacks to the Holocaust. And Sidney Lumet, I think, is one of my favourite filmmakers, and I've not seen that film, so I'm going to go watch that now.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting because I kind of thought it was a bit shit, and I'll tell you why.
Okay, sure, go for it.
No, I really loved this. I think the thing that kept me going was that I found the story so compelling and so interesting, and I'd never heard of it before. But I felt like I wanted to see somebody else's take on it, just like in terms of like the filming of it, the way they use flashbacks and stuff like that. When he finally has kids at the end, it's also an IVF journey. when he has his kids, I was kind of like, ooh, what would the story be if it was like from his son's perspective? There was like an element of it. I think I enjoyed the film. I shouldn't say I thought it was kind of shit. I think I enjoyed the film overall. I did feel like there was something tangible. There was something lost in it. And it was like a perspective thing that I was like, and a way that they told the story. And using the flashbacks and stuff like that, where I'm like, I feel like it needs something a little bit more tangible or something. I don't know. Like, there was something missing in it for me. But at the same time, I thought all the acting was really great. I thought some of the cinematography was really great. But I think overall, just like the whole film, I was like, what?
Where is it?
Yeah. I wasn't 100% on board with the flashbacks, like that being the way that it was, that we followed his like boxing career post-war. And then the flashbacks kind of came in sporadically every like 20 minutes or so. We'd have a scene that was in black and white, and that was his memory. I wasn't 100% on board with that. I found myself being far more kind of interested in the flashback stuff than I was the boxing career stuff. It kind of lagged a little bit for me. However, I do think that the sound, the music.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's Hans Zimmer, by the way. Hans Zimmer did the music.
What the hell? Yeah. When does that guy stop?
He doesn't.
I think he's got like a little, I think he's like, oh, yes, I'll come in and I'll press a little key, and then you can do the rest
he's
of it.
Cheat,
I think he's
cheat.
Like Michelangelo. I think he's got a lot of little underlings under him. Like, you know.
And I thought the cinematography was phenomenal, and I think that the cast was fucking stacked.
I mean, we finally got to see Billy Magnussen or whatever his name is play a Nazi, and he has his whole career been leading up to that point.
Yeah, he's just like, give me the role.
Hey, I can do
but
this.
There isn't a role in this. This is what I was thinking on my drive here. Because I watched it today. I usually watch it the day before, but I did watch it today. The drive here, I was thinking there isn't someone that I would – I often think, like, who would I like to see play that role? I wouldn't change anyone in this film, I don't think.
Sarsgaard is like – I think that there's, like, some sort of two-for-one deal. I feel like he and Johnny Legs.
Yeah.
What was his name going to be in Johnny Bravo, Johnny –
Was he going to change his
name? No. It was like if he'd had a different name.
Oh, yeah. What was it going to be? He was going to be Johnny. Oh, God.
It was,
someone
we watched
us
him on like a. So, yeah, please someone remind us. We watched him do an episode of like Find My Family.
Where he found out what his great-great-grandfather's last name was.
That's so funny.
So, and he could have been Johnny something.
I love that shit.
But him and Sarsgaard, Peter Sarsgaard. I got in trouble. It's Sarsgaard.
Sarsgaard.
Not Skarsgård.
I always do that, though. Yeah, I always say
I didn't Skarsgård. Even know I was doing it, and then I found out. But they are in so many movies together. And I think it's a type of film they're drawn to. I think it's a budget that, like, can afford them. I think it's but, like, Johnny Legs and Sarsgaard. And I think it's also just like a probability thing. Mm. Yeah. If two people are in 200 movies each, chances are they're going to be in 50 together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but they are in so many movies together. But they were both playing parts that they play really well and often. Like,
no, yeah, that's exactly. They were like iconically Sarsgaard.
That neither of them auditioned. It was like, hey, Sarsgaard, you want to play a sleazy journalist? Yes, I do. Hey, Johnny, you want to play
Sarsgaard.
Yeah, he is.
Like, it's like as soon as he came in with his iconic, like quite like sweet, almost like it's like a syrupy voice when he's like, well, I'm going to tell you a story if you like. And you're like, you're a villain.
Yeah, he's a thinking man's Edward Norton.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would love to do a quick chat about Ben Foster, who played Harry.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't, when I read the cast, I was like, oh, I don't know who Ben Foster is. Didn't recognize the name, right? And then I saw him, I'm like, where do I know this guy from? And I'm like watching it a bit and then I'm like, all right, I'll just pull him up on the IMDb because you can do that now because of the internet.
So what's this? What's this IMDb?
what is it actually me?
So like, yeah,
internet
I was,
movie database.
Oh God, my whole thing's just gone crazy. But anyway, I was looking at it and I was like, 3:10 to Yuma. Yeah, I've seen that, but that's not it. That's not where I recognize him. And then I was like, oh, he's also been in, you know, Alpha Dog. I've not seen that. And then I was like, no, that's not it. And then I was scrolling through his filmography. And I was like, there it fucking is. He was in a movie called Get Over It in the early noughties, maybe like 2001 or something. We're talking Kristen Stewart. We're talking Sisko.
Yeah.
We're talking Shane West, who we've talked about a lot on this podcast.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Well, yep. And Shane West did ER with John Leguizamo.
And A Walk to Remember.
Don't even. That's my least favorite movie of all time.
Yet she's watched it. My least favorite movie of all time.
Get Over It is like, I watched that film. It's got Marty Short in it
as well.
My
mind is blown.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I know exactly who he is. He's the lead guy.
The lead guy.
He sings a song in it. They do the play. He's obsessed with Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, Kristen Dunst. Yeah, thank you. And it's like, this movie is one of those high school movies that came out, it's like its target audience is like 18-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And it's about a high school that's putting on a play and the play is A Midsummer Night's Dream, but then the actual Get Over It, the story of the actual movie is kind of A Midsummer Night's Dream-ish.
Mm.
And it's just got this like fucked – Sisko's in it. It's anyway, insane. He plays the lead and I was like, why did he get this role? I remember watching it going like, who's he? I know all the others. Like, who's this guy? And then 20 years later he pops up. And playing Harry Haft in The Survivor, like a lead, really well.
Just phenomenal.
Like, what the fuck?
When he's sitting there after that fight and his face is beat, I was like, oh. Also, like the whole thing of like him like wanting to do these fights and stuff and wanting to get in the paper so that he could find the love of his life that like he was separated from in Poland because of the Nazis. Mm. And then like, it's like feeling that like she's gone, maybe he's accepted that. And then like years later, they're both fucking married.
Yeah.
And then they come together and they're like, and there's this moment of like, it didn't feel like they were both like, oh, but we found the loves of our lives outside of this as well. Mm. It felt like they were like, damn.
Yeah.
It really felt like they were like, this could have been, his sons, they've been like, man, sorry, dad.
Like, but we got to go back to mum now.
Yeah.
Like that's, I think that was something I really liked is that there was just this like lack of sentimentality. It looked like an older movie.
Yeah.
Like, it looked and felt, because it was very written, it had very beautiful music, it was shot very beautifully, it felt older than it is.
Yeah, and he was giving Marlon Brando.
Yeah. Like it felt like, to me, it felt kind of 80s, 90s, you know, like maybe 70s, but it felt older, but it really just didn't have any sentimentality to it. It was just.
You're so right about the 80s thing. That is exactly what it felt like. It had that kind of, we talk a lot about being in the right headspace for movies, particularly really, really heavy ones. Maybe I just wasn't in the right headspace, but I found that it lagged a bit. Often like I do when I watch dramas from the 80s, because they don't do a lot of flashbang stuff. It's a lot of like you're kind of this character's kind of carrying you through.
Maybe
this
that was
story.
It for me as well. Yeah. Because I skipped a bit only because I can't watch fights. I hate watching like boxing fights.
What about on the street if like just like a cat fight?
Maybe I could watch that.
Like just like two girls
yeah. fighting.
Yeah. Like, you know.
If I'm like in mud and bikinis and I'm like, okay, I can watch this fight. But I can't. There's boxing fights in particular because it's all brutal. For the head.
Yeah, it's so
I'm like, punch him in the shoulder or something.
And it's
MMA fights really. Like my partner watches MMA fights sometimes, like on television, obviously. And I can't get on. I'm like, I can't get on board with that. It's just too, like my goal is to hurt you. That's just a bit like insane.
Well,
to
and
me.
I think, but I mean, I think it's worth, that's what I thought this was going to be, that kind of movie. I thought this was going to be like inspiring and boxing and Rocky and that it wasn't that it was,
no,
it was not that. And the fighting was not meant to be anything other than what it was.
Yeah.
It's really brutal.
Yeah.
It's a brutal film. It's a brutal.
It's got an
film.
R rating because of violence.
Yeah.
It's and it's not like, it's full on.
I was going to say, I just thought it was just really nice. There was a lot of moments there where other filmmakers would have played it more sad.
Yeah.
Or more beautiful or more inspiring or more
Hollywood.
And there was a lot, it was interesting because it looked very Hollywood and it sounded very Hollywood, but then there were just a lot of scenes that were just like, fuck,
yeah,
this is fucked up and I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of that. It just sort of sat in the, I don't know, man.
And also just like how you're like, they just didn't even have the words to describe, like that moment where he's literally saying he doesn't, where he's talking to his brother and he's like, that was heartbreaking. But just also being like, nobody was like talking about trauma and like everybody was just like, yep, you just
awful.
Get up and keep. And imagine being the kids. That's what I was thinking about. It's like, you're the children of that as well.
Have you ever watched, it's a bit loaded now, but have you ever watched Transparent? The second season of Transparent, I think, addresses the intergenerational trauma of the Holocaust.
It's beautifully. It's so good.
I'm sorry to all our
Judith
listeners
Light.
That are here for funny, but
yeah.
But season
they got
two
the funny,
of Transparent.
Funny at the start. Yeah. We're good.
Season two of Transparent is just, I think, addresses exactly that because that's like two generations later.
Yeah.
That is a trauma that lives on.
Yeah.
That's a trauma and it's just, I think that's why it's so important. I mean, I don't want to get too, but that's why it's so important that we tell these stories that we watch these stories and that we encourage people to watch these stories because I think that it was not long ago and it's so important that people know
that's
this is
really
a fucking factor in people's lives.
Yeah,
and
100%.
It's only a few generations back and they just need to, if we want to live in a more empathetic world, we need to know these stories.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sorry, Mish, go on.
No. I think, like, no, you make, thinking about how it wasn't very long ago really fucks me every time.
Three, four generations. People are still alive today, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, and like you said, then they raised people. People lived through that and then raised people and then they raised people. And that doesn't go away.
No.
And I just think it's so, and the ideas that led to that don't go away. Mm. I don't want to get too full on here, but it's just...
Bringing it back to legs. I had a big lesson when we watched Encanto because we loved Encanto.
Encanto, I mean, you're only human.
And I was like, oh, that grandmother's a bitch. And then I was just like, she's just a bitch. And then Zach was just like, oh, I think...
And the movie.
Sorry?
And the second half of the movie. You were about to say, Zach said this. And I was like, also the movie said this.
Anyway, for the movie. Yeah, sorry. No. That it's a lot more about intergenerational trauma. And I was just like, oh... And then I had someone DM me, and I don't remember their name, and I'm so sorry, but I had a big chat with them about it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And I had this, like, real, like that's exactly what
that
is. She's not just a big fucking bitch. I think I learned a lot from that experience, and it happened to be with Encanto.
It's also crazy, even just, like, looking at the way that you grew up is because of the way that your parents grew up is because of the way that their parents grew up, and you see that happen. Mm. Like, God, I hope he's not listening to this podcast. He's a big supporter of my work. But my dad didn't have, like, a super present dad in his life, and you see that because he's very clucky with his adult children. But he's so obsessed with us. And but sometimes I'm like, you don't have to worry. Like, he'll be like, oh God, I'm sorry, I won't be there for like this thing. And it's like, that's fine. But his idea of like what a good dad is like out of control.
Yeah.
Because he's got no idea, no path to follow. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you sound like a crazy man. Yeah.
Right now. No, 100%.
You know, it's quite, it's kind of interesting, and you got to have time for it. But I literally cannot imagine what it was like, especially for the first generation after that, to be raised by parents who like wouldn't even talk about it. There are people whose parents told them on their deathbeds that they'd survived camps and stuff like that. Like, they said that they'd made it out of the countries in time their whole lives, and then like on their deathbeds admitted that they were at the camps, which is just
fucked up.
Yeah. And it's just, you could imagine that you just like don't want to give them that trauma. But
what do you? How do you even do? Like, what do you even do with that?
Yeah.
Like, that is so awful. It's so awful.
Yeah,
I think it's one of those things where it's like it's just so important to have the context, and you know that there are other. You know, there are other people. I feel like I'm getting too heavy for the butt, but it's just like,
it's fun.
I think it's so important that we're more empathetic to all refugees and all people that come from different cultures, because it's like when people see shit like that, it's going to take them a minute to work through it, process it, and we need to just be more empathetic and loving and do all that we can to like... It's just so full on. And I that's just what I'll... To bring it back to this film, what I loved about this film and what I thought... Like I said, I've now read about it, and there are other films I want to watch now, particularly this Sidney Lumet film. I should look up the name of it. But something that I loved about this compared to, you know, I think the black and white photography was very evocative of Schindler's List. I think that... By having it, the flashbacks, it placed it in our world in a way. I think sometimes you can watch films about this, about the Holocaust, and it can be easy to put it into another place, another time, another world. But to have someone in a time closer to now, in a society closer to ours, having flashbacks to it, I thought that connection, I don't know, it just made me sort of, it's a perspective I haven't quite seen on it, and that really I think it was, and like you said, I think I was in the right place to watch this movie. I think it was something I needed to see. Like I just was like, it was the right time for me to see this story, and it was just, I just thought it was really very powerful, and I really love stories like this where it's just a story, just a really talented artists, I'm going on a rant here, but talented artists and craftspeople telling a story.
Yes.
And not being too fancy with it. Just.
And also, like we've said this before in the podcast, but I'm going to say it again. No, wait, I don't know if we have said this before in the podcast.
Maybe you haven't.
Before starting this podcast, I assumed that anything that was straight to television or straight to DVD was not great. You know what I mean? Or straight, like that if it didn't hit the cinemas, that it probably wasn't worth seeing, or that it wouldn't, whatever. If it doesn't have the 8-9 star ratings, whatever. But that's just not the case.
It's literally just about whether they had a good whether they had a good festival run or whether they got the right distributor or whether it made it to Australia or whether, like, this was just, it got made as a HBO film.
It's there's so many standalone movies there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's why, and people will use that, good directors and writers will use a TV film to, like, get the buzz around them, to get that Emmy nom and a Golden Globe nomination so that then they can move on to more feature films.
But also, like, there's probably, I think with HBO sometimes, because, like, the very accomplished directors are just like, I want to tell this story.
Yeah.
And I don't really mind how I put it out.
Mm. But it's like when HBO did Grey Gardens, it was like, I can't imagine that having a cinematic release unless, like, I mean, maybe Greta Gerwig can write a... Actually, that would be pretty incredible. But, like,
she's
the story...
tied up in Narnia land
But the story could have success in a narrower, like, more niche, like, in an HBO field, whereas if there was... If you had to do a cinematic release, then there'd be extra pressures, extra producers and all this other stuff to change the story to suit a wider audience rather than being like, no, this is for people who watch HBO at 9 p.m. on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And like, and might already be familiar with this story and stuff like that, which I think is kind of cool. I do want to say, so do you remember that scene where Danny DeVito is walking on the pier with him right before the fight?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Danny was present that day on set? I don't think he was.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention. Like, I wasn't even thinking about
it. There was not.
Fuck, that's funny.
It was just the back of him the whole walk of the pier. And we saw the other guy's face. We saw Harry's face. And then they get to the pier. They sit on the edge. It's a new shot, but you still don't see his face.
Yeah.
And I was like, they could have just got another guy of similar stature.
I'm usually really good at picking up on stuff like that. And
I was just like, I don't believe that he was there. Just don't think it was too. And I was, at first I was like, maybe it's an artistic choice, but there was too many broken shots trying to convince us that they are in the same. And he wasn't even in. Like, I couldn't even get him to go to the pier another day.
They had him for like 2 days.
Yeah,
like you got Danny for 2 days. He was great in this.
I forget
how much I like Danny DeVito. I think he's a bit of fun.
It was such a great cut. I genuinely was, though, I do want to just come back, like, almost this is my final thought. It's Ben Forster. Is that his name? Ben? No.
Is it Ben Foster?
Ben Foster, yeah. Ben Forster is a music theatre star, I think.
Ben Foster. Should have been in the film.
I had a real, like, who's this guy moment as well. And I need to look. Oh, he's in the Laramie Project. Anyway. There was like a bit when he was confronting.
Whoa.
There was a bit where he was confronting Sarsgaard in the second scene in the boxing ring where he just like, I can't even remember what it was, but like he did this line where he was like talking about something heavy and he just did like a, what would you do? Or he did like a, da-da-da-da. Like he had this throwaway line where I was just like, this is some of the best acting I've ever seen in my life. I was just like, holy fucking shit.
I felt that
How
way.
Is this guy like not?
Yeah, that's what I was. That's my big, big, big takeaway from this film, based on cast, or one of them anyway, is that where is Ben Foster? Because he's phenomenal. Like, he really is. And, like, I mean, he does stuff. He's working. He's a working actor. But, like, and I mean, he's in X-Men. He's done shit. But, like, I'd not noticed him. Maybe he's what John Leguizamo is.
I was just about to say.
Yeah, because I'd not noticed him. And he was phenomenal. For me, final thought. The final flashback scene of his final fight at the camp was fucking, like, floored me.
Yeah. Oh, that was devastating.
Devastating. But it was just some of the most, he was so good. It's like, this was his role. Like, this was just really, really cool for him to get, you know?
Mm.
That's my final thought. Bit of a shout out to Ben Foster. Oh, I have one other final thought, but.
No, yeah. Do it.
My other final thought is actually about John Leguizamo.
Yes.
And
you could have saved it. You could have. This is what I'll often do when I have two final thoughts. Mm. You want to know my trick?
Mm.
I'll, and particularly if the save second one
is
then you save it for the Leguizamo.
That's what I was about to do, but then Jordan said, go on. No, I'm going to save it. Go on, Jordan.
You'll see a little bit of Leguizamo magic.
Wait, Jordan, do you have any final thoughts? You don't have to.
Final thoughts for me. I think I still stand by what I said at the start. I think I rushed to say that I thought it was shit.
That's okay.
It's fine.
I think I just wasn't in the right headspace. And also
we say that a lot. And often that's code for it was shit. But no, like I was very much in the right headspace.
Yes.
I could say.
Yeah. But also maybe I just I think that I maybe skipping through the fighting scenes because I just was flinching so hard. Honestly, just flinching.
Yeah.
Like, just like, and just can't, I've never been hit in the face. So the imagine, like, oh, I mean, I've been hit in the face, but I've never been, like, punched, you know?
Yeah.
So, listeners, if you see me, I'd love some empathy for these guys so then I can finally watch a fight scene. But I think that maybe that possibly lost the gravitas for me, like the tension in the film. I do think that it could have been, I think that something that was lost was just the way that they told the story, but I did like coming back to Sarsgaard at the end, him showing up. I literally clutched my pearls. I was like, what is he going to say? And also, oh, okay, so this is a twist that was never going to happen, but in my sick mind, I thought that maybe his wife did find her and didn't tell him. I thought that was going to be like a final reveal. But that didn't
that would
happen
have been a
because
great
that
twist.
Would have been psycho and not in the world of the movie at
and
all.
And also the movie's biographical. So
exactly,
did that...
exactly.
And it's not 90s biographical.
And, it's like, and I was like,
back in the 90s, they would have just done
sexy
it.
Thriller.
They would have just changed
and
the
this
ending.
Has got to wrap up in 5 minutes. They're not going to...
Yeah.
It's not going to be like that. And that would be insane. But a part of me was like, I've watched too much Gossip Girl.
It is amazing sometimes. Like, we'll do that where we'll be like, I really wanted a twist. And then it's like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, well, that's
have it. Have I just been like fucked up? By,
well, that's
like,
what absolutely. Meadowland was for me. I really liked Meadowland. I was in the right headspace for Meadowland.
Yeah, and time. I was terribly yeah. in the wrong place.
And I, like, the first time I watched Meadowland, because we had to watch it twice. It was the only movie we've ever had to watch twice because we lost the first recording. But the second time I watched it, it was like, the first time I watched it, I was like, I just want a twist. Where's the, and there's no twist. It's literally just this story of this couple trying to survive this thing. Anyway, we should do our Leguistamos. Jordan, Leguistamos are essentially a rating out of 5 stars on how Leguizamo-y it is. So it's not what you think the film is. So, for example, I would give this film 3 stars, but I'm going to give it... Wait, before I give my... Can I give my Leguistamo rating first? Do you mind?
Yeah, but yeah, you explain
I'm going to explain why I'm going to give this particular score. Now, John Leguizamo was fantastic in this. And it is such a Leguizamo role. You were right when you said that this is a Sarsgaard role and this is a John Leguizamo role. I agree with you. 10 years earlier. I don't think this was... Like, there was something about this role that just didn't quite sit right with me. I don't know why. I don't know why. I can't explain it. He was great. He was fantastic. He was fun. There was like ad-libby stuff he did. He's phenomenal. He really does give space to everybody else. That was a beautiful thing you said at top there, Jordan. Like,
so true.
Yeah. This was not, he was not the star of this film and he knew his, and he shone in exactly what he was doing. However, I don't actually think it was the perfect role for John Leguizamo. I'm going to give it 3.5 Leguistamos.
Do you know what it felt like? Yeah, I'm going to save it for my Starmo.
Go, Zach.
Save your Starmo. I think this is a great film. I really, and again, I think I was in the right place for it. I think it's a really special film. I think people should watch it, form their own opinion and have it because it's just, it's very, it is what it is. Makes me want to rewatch. Good Morning Vietnam, so bad.
I love that movie.
I haven't seen that film in so long.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid. It also feels like one of those movies where I'm like, what would it look like with like today? Do you know what I mean?
If they made it today?
Or watching it back. If it's something you haven't seen for like years and years, I wonder like, because those movies are often like kind of interesting, especially like, I feel like that we're going on a Good Morning America, Good Morning Vietnam.
Good Morning America
is very different.
Very different.
A lot darker.
I think that, look, I just remember the reason why I think what I remember of it was that it really used his stand-up style. It used Robin Williams' stand-up style to put me at ease. It's one of the first examples I ever have in my head of Taika Waititi did it really beautifully with Boy. That's a great example I can think of more recently. But something that puts you at ease with humor and then devastates you with like the film that it's actually telling, like the idea of the whole piece. That's my memory of it, is that it was really funny, but the whole thing was a really devastating anti-war
like the
film.
Truman Show.
Yeah.
Like the Truman Show.
That's the one I can think.
Truman Show was less anti-war.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Less anti-war, but like softens. So is boy.
Opened. No, but it's just it was the timing of you saying
it
that.
Does. The takeaway was war is hell, which is the whereas I think that more the other movies I think about like Saving Private Ryan and stuff like that. Sometimes it's like. War is hell, but ultimately America.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Even Band of Brothers does that. Like right up until like the final episode, they're like, "And don't forget America."
Yeah, I'm like,
oh, God, I'd forgotten America.
Yeah. There's that bit like in Saving Private Ryan where the opening 20 minutes is so devastating.
Yeah.
But it ends on Tom Hanks with a pistol shooting a tank.
Yeah. America.
It's like it's. I'm not gonna kill this tank, but I'm gonna fucking try.
What's your Starmo?
My Starmo is... so I just wanted to say how highly I thought of it. In terms of Starmo, it's like a 3, maybe a 2.5. It's a 2.5 Starmo. He's good in it. Yeah. It's a great Leguizamo role. I think I'm here for, at this point in his career, I'm here for no less than a third build or an end.
That's what I, that was the
and
point.
And this is a fifth or a sixth build.
He wasn't even, he's not even in the main cast list.
And
on,
it's like, and I,
all the websites and stuff. In fact, I had to like triple check he was in it before like I committed to giving it to you, Joe, because I was like, where's his name? There's no pictures of him. I can't, he's there.
And I love him in it. And I think he said yes because it's a powerful story. I'm glad we watched it. I think that's maybe why he did it. He was probably like, good this story. Is a week of shooting.
Yeah.
It's a great story. It's a beautiful story. And I'd love to be a part of it. And I think that's really nice. But I just think I'm not going to give it more than a 2.5 Leguizamo if he it's the Mishwitrup rule.
Mm.
You could replace him and it would have still been as powerful of a film.
Because you wanted more for him as well. Ultimately, it's because.
Well, no, I think it was just, you know. So Speed, for example, gets 2 Leguizamos, even though he's not in it.
Yeah.
There's an intangible quality to the Leguizamo.
Yeah.
I think what it is he – I didn't want more of him.
Yes,
in it,
okay.
Right? That is a high Leguizamo score might be that he's not in it that much and I wanted more. That's a very Leguizamo thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That
very.
He's in two, he's in the first act and the last act and I just wanted more Leguizamo.
Or he dies in the first third.
And you're like, why did he die?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be like a main character.
5 Leguizamo.
That's a 5 Leguizamo. To be hurt like that is a very Leguizamo experience, as you know. For me, it was the fact that I didn't need more of him. This was Ben Foster. This was there were so many beautiful actors. I thought it was such a beautiful story. Mm. He was in it the right amount, and if he wasn't in it, I would have liked the film just as much.
100%.
And I loved. Let me tell you, I love John Leguizamo.
Yeah,
I hadn't gathered that from being invited here this evening.
So, Jordan, based on your knowledge of Leguizamos now, having seen The Survivor, what would you? How
this is the most tasteless thing we've ever done.
I would say
this film Leguizamos.
I give it 3 Leguizamos.
You're beautiful.
I would have said 2.5, but the reason I give it 3 is because when he came on screen, I went, oh, "There's John."
I love when that's still. It doesn't matter how many episodes deep we are in this podcast. I still have that reaction whenever I see
Waco,
him in anything.
Waco
is still is the best. Loving.
Yes.
Have you seen Waco?
Have you seen Waco?
Of course, I've seen Waco.
Jordan.
That.
You simply must
I
be
love
a host
cult,
of this
I love John.
We'll have you on when you know there's a new Waco coming out. It's Waco the Trials.
Yeah.
I have heard about this.
It's already come out.
I've forgotten about it.
We just don't have access to it.
Oh, really?
It's out.
Wow.
Michael Shannon's in it?
Yeah.
Well, he's back. I mean, was he in the last couple episodes of Waco? I watched it all on a plane, which was full on.
Yeah.
I was like, I hate this, but I have to keep going.
Oh,
like,
I want to rewatch Waco so bad. I really
And it's
want
got
to.
That chick from To Leslie in it that everybody campaigned
yes,
for.
Yes. Well, we watched
She's
that
so
very
good.
Early on.
She is
we
very
must
good.
Watch.
She had a rough run there.
I'm so excited for Waco the Trials.
But his appearance in that, do you remember that? You probably don't, but we were talking. It's like he pops his head through a window.
They span across the street and they go to an empty house and then there's John just like walks up to the window and that's the end of the episode.
Absolutely
and it was,
sweating as well.
Oh,
like
it was the most absolute. It was the most beautiful Leguizamo reveal ever. Jordan.
Yes.
Where
okay,
can people find you? What do you need to plug?
Okay. I will plug. Oh, I just want to finish with the Starmers.
Last thing.
I think he did it because of the team. I think that that was what was evident for me. So it didn't. It wasn't enough for him to get any more half or full stars for that point. Because I was like, you just want to work with these people, which is fair enough.
I love that. He said, I'll do it to work with Barry Levison.
Yeah.
And then he didn't get a fucking part in Dope Sick.
Absolutely. He's like, he did the same reason that I did the dance call for West Side Story when I left uni. I was like, just want to be seen. It's just good to be in front of people. But you can find me on Instagram at jbar_666. I have two podcasts, Pop Gaze and Sex and the Sex in the Sex. They both are coming out of a big hiatus, but I promise we're committing. Guys, don't worry. We've just been really busy.
Well, Mish and Zach love a hiatus.
Yeah, we do. We enjoy it. How far into Sex and the Sex and the Sex are you?
Pretty far. We're up to season 5.
Great.
Which the backstory is that Honor and I started this when we were 21. So given that context.
Wow.
What
are you now, 22? Oh, yeah. Hey.
I watched 2 random episodes of season 1 of Sex and the City today after watching The Survivor. And fuck, I'm keen to rewatch the whole thing again.
Oh, we'll have you on. We'll have you both on. It's great. It's good fun.
I'd love to. I'd love to be on it.
So you'll be on it in 10 years' time when we get to season 6.
I love Sex and the City too. The movies of Sex and the City is
shocking.
Shocking.
I've never seen them. I've never seen Sex and the City until we started watching.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
It's good. It's dated, but it's good.
Oh, boy, yeah. Oh,
it's
totally
dated, but it is still so enjoyable.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mish,
where can we find you?
At Mish Witchrop, mate. At Mish and Zach.
Yeah, hell yeah.
What about you, Zach? Yeah.
Threads.
Yes. Find Zach on Threads. Thank you so much for joining us, Jordan. Thank you so much for listening in. What should Tom take us away with?
I'm good. I think it's fine. No, I don't mind.
Tom, you choose what would you take us away with this week.
Maybe Hans Zimmer.
Some Hans Zimmer.
That's nice.
Yeah. Or some Hans Zimmer-esque music that you've written for something. Yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Tom. True. Thanks, Tom. I don't know, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. And thank you so much for listening, and we'll bloody catch you next week. Bye.